You're listening to the NHExit.org podcast.
All right. This is Russell again with the NHExit podcast, and this time I brought on Scott Scheller. Is that the way you say your last name?
Yep.
Okay. I met you, what, 2-3 years ago?
Yeah, I first met you at the Shell when we started
over near the seacoast. And we were talking NHExit way that time too. Yeah. Did you go with Matt C. of the New Hampshire Independence PAC to Freedom Fest?
Yeah, I did. I went with Steve Villay. He has this interesting project.
Oh, yeah. It was all
Club 75 guys. Yeah. So yeah.
You were going there to help Steve with the Club 75?
Yeah. So okay. it's this project to get people that make $75,000 or more to New Hampshire so we can push for greater autonomy from the federal government or even become independent so that we can get rid of the income tax. Because people that make over $75,000 are disproportionately harmed by the income tax. So we want a coalition of people to move to New Hampshire and actually have an incentive to try to remove the income tax.
Now, Steve's idea is that, you know, have people move here and push that direction. And he thinks that we should try to become independent, but that we should ask the federal government to let us go, right?
Yeah.
He doesn't want to do it unilaterally. Right. Is that what you're thinking too?
I mean, ideally, that would probably be the best, wouldn't you say? The problem is that how likely is that to happen? Is the federal government going to just allow New Hampshire or any other state to leave?
Especially if we're piling up people that would normally be paying a lot of income tax. They wouldn't want to go. When did you first get interested in secession or anything like that? Is that been something on your radar for a while or what's?
Well, I started listening to Tom Woods about 10 years ago, and he was always a pro-secession person in the fact that it should be legal and states should be allowed to do it. And that these boundaries and this union is actually the states joining the federal government, or the states creating the federal government, not the other way around. The states came first. The King of England actually gave independence to all 13 colonies individually. So the King of England named every single state, he didn't name one union. He named every single at the time colony when he declared that they would be independent after losing the war. So
yeah, that makes sense. So also from a guy like that's point of view, he knows the history of it and isn't blinded to the fact that we weren't always together. Every state that joined did it reluctantly, and it wasn't a slam dunk. And everyone they all wanted to have the possibility to go back, right?
They would not have joined the Constitution if they knew that they could not leave.
Yeah, and even people talk about Texas, having an out. I remember when I lived in California. I mean, even it had an out. And of course, Wyoming has it very explicitly. Each one of these places, when they joined, it wasn't an automatic thing. Just because you were in this part of this continent didn't make you part of the United States. You had to decide.
No, in fact, some of the incentives to get, especially Western states, to join the union was free banking. They were going to reduce the amount of banking regulations and allow more banks to allow a more liberal or free banking system. So in the West, when the United States was founded, there was not many banks. I think in 1800, there was only 28 different banks. Hmm. They may had some branches, but, and it was kind of difficult to start a bank. And, the Western states, the federal government basically said you can charter your own banks, and you're not going to have all of these requirements. And for a while, we had a free banking system in the U.S. prior to the Civil War and prior to the Federal Reserve, and it was each bank had their own banknotes. They were all tied to either gold or silver. And yeah, there are all these requirements. And that was one of the incentives to actually move west and to, start populating these states. And that was a big component of the early United States and the expansion westward.
Yeah. What do you think we should do? What would be your preferred outcome after New Hampshire leaves? What do you think we should be doing for banking and money and stuff like that?
I think we should have a free banking system. Banks should be allowed to have as many branches as they want, and to have their own banknotes.
And what do you think the banknotes would be backed by, or what would be?
I think they would probably be backed by gold. Who knows? It might be Bitcoin. There could be a lot of different innovations, how banking works.
Yeah. Do you think each bank would do it different, or would they do multiple things, or what do you think?
I think that there would be some uniformity, because you want to make transaction costs as low as possible. Yeah, meaning that when you're transacting at a store, it's difficult to have 100 different currencies, right? Mm-hmm. So you would ideally want something that is relatively uniform and accepted. That's why gold was always such a such a great money for thousands of years because of all of its functions. Meaning it could be, it's fungible. It can be, it's divisible. It has a good store of account. It stores value very well. I think the market would determine, and if the U.S. is still around, I imagine everybody would still be using the U.S. dollar as far as a main currency. I think anybody would accept it.
Yeah, it seems like that would be going on for a while, and then you could slowly change. And right. Like you're saying, and also like how would the banks that are here interact with banks in other places? Well, they have some common thing.
Yeah, and nationwide banking is good. Actually, one of the biggest problems in the early U.S. up until almost the 90s is that, especially in the North, banks weren't allowed to have any branches across state lines, and it made banking very fragile. So imagine you only have one bank, one branch, and it every town had like one bank. So it relied entirely on the local economy. Yeah. So if the local economy took a dump, there would be a bank run and the bank would fail. But if you have many branches, let's say there's a struggling bank, they could take some capital from one of the banks that is doing well. Maybe they're invested in a mining area, which has a lot of, it's booming. And let's say farming is doing bad. So they can actually ship some of their capital from the mining area to the farming area to stabilize the banks. And vice versa, there's a lot more diversity when you have a more diversified banking system. It actually increases the stability. That's why Canada has a nationwide banking system. And they've never had any banking crisis in their history. While the U.S. lost, I think, 2,000 banks in the Great Depression, Canada lost zero. Mm-hmm. And that's because their banking system was nationwide and very diversified. It was much more free than U.S. And that's actually why they want to, instead of fixing the problems of all this, these unitary banks, which were extremely fragile, the U.S. thought that was politically infeasible, and they developed the Federal Reserve System to try to liquefy, to be a lender of last resort to these banks. It initially was a very basic concept. If they would lend to banks if they were solvent and they could afford it at a higher rate of interest than what was the rate of interest in the market. But it turned out to be very quickly the Federal Reserve started to become this money printer to fund the federal government's debts, especially during the First World War. So it quickly changed from its initial purpose just to liquefy insolvent or banks that were having a hard time to being this massive money printer and that caused all the problems that we know today. So, I think a free banking system, and I think leaving it up to the market in New Hampshire would actually work out pretty well. It probably would be fairly similar to what we have right now. Hopefully more secure and stable, though.
Yeah, and if we have a free market for banking, maybe some real big things will get built up and we'll be a banking center for other people that don't like some of the restrictions or problems in their country. You know, we could be like the Bahamas or something, you know.
Yeah, that's right. We could be a privacy. We could actually have what Switzerland used to have and privacy.
Yeah,
but
yeah,
the federal government, the laws passed during the Bush administration and Obama ruined banking privacy. So basically, the government can snoop into any account and to find, you know, because of terrorists. Or excuse me, because of terrorists or whatnot, and Switzerland, and they've been pressuring other countries to do as well. Like for example, Switzerland and Liechtenstein used to have extremely secretive banks where you could just dump your money into them and with no questions asked. And that changed after 9/11. So maybe New Hampshire can go back to that banking secrecy, and that could be a real source of income for New Hampshire if it were to be independent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's part of the stuff I think about. You know, it's one of the reasons why I think we should go is because of the banking that being tied to the Federal Reserve System doesn't stop you from having inflation, doesn't stop you from having banks fail, doesn't stop you from having boom-bust cycles.
Right.
You still have that. So, you know, I'm willing to try the other way and see what happens.
that's right. Deregulating, if New Hampshire was independent, the amount of government regulations really hamper entrepreneurship and market development. And with a deregulated New Hampshire, we could really be an entrepreneurial powerhouse where we try new things and, you know, entrepreneurs aren't burdened by the probably million pages of regulations. So it would be good for innovation and invention, and that is thwarted by the federal government, especially medical innovation, because medical innovation is so thwarted by the FDA. It's ridiculous. It takes a lot, many times 12 to 20 years to get a drug onto the market, especially. And that's because of the, sorry, I got a cough today. That's because of the FDA requirements. And and it costs billions of dollars too. So if we had a deregulated market there, we could actually have medical tourism where people came to New Hampshire to try innovative new drugs for, let's say, cancer that they can't get anywhere else, or procedures that are banned in the United States that are illegal in New Hampshire. So there's just so many avenues if you have a deregulated state that can cause that state to flourish. And it's, you know, all these years of just building up these really harmful regulations that generally just benefit certain industries. So. The big businesses write almost all the regulations to harm smaller businesses. And if we can get out from underneath that, it could be an absolute boom for New Hampshire and so many different avenues.
Yeah, I definitely think that'd be one of the things. I mean, it might take a while, but yeah, some of it might have to be instantaneous by not having crazy rules, you know, and just right away.
Yeah, I mean, I can imagine there's tons of, I'll just give an example. In the 1980s in Israel and in Italy, they had a cocktail of drugs that basically kept people alive that had AIDS or HIV. It kept people alive, and obviously you can't cure it, but you can mitigate its effects. And in the US, these cocktails were completely banned, and which caused so many people to die unnecessarily. I mean, these AIDS at the time, I'm sure you remember, was it basically a dead, you were dead if you got it. So, but
most people felt that way. And then it did seem like, yeah, for the most part, people were in trouble. You know,
they were in trouble, but in some of these other states, countries, they actually had cocktails that would keep people alive. Fauci and, and the U.S. medical establishment had made these illegal. And that's actually the premise of the movie, the true movie, Dallas Buyers Club. there are similar things now that are illegal that would be efficacious for health that are banned in the U.S. that people could use in New Hampshire to get these medicines. So, if you wanted to get cured of cancer, you go to New Hampshire because we have all the cancer drugs. So,
well, and also if New Hampshire splits off, maybe we won't have any bureaucrats that have been doing it for 40 years, like Fauci.
Yeah,
it was shocking to find out how long that guy's been making money off of us. And
he's always been corrupt. bureaucrat. He's always been a really sketchy, shady figure.
I know. So. I mean, I didn't even know who he was, but yeah, there was people that were in that, you know, in AIDS activism and things like that. They hated him a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
For the reasons I talked about. I mean, there was, he was promoting, was it AZT?
Yeah, I think that was
killed like basically every single person that took it. Whereas there was these other drugs across the pond where that actually worked, that he was preventing from, you know, from use in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, part of the reason I was calling you, having you on, besides that you're another person that's interested in the NHX topic, you know some more details about all this stuff. Those of us that are into radical politics have been watching the, what's his name, Javier Milei? How do you say his
Milei.
Name?
Javier Milei.
Yeah, so, you know, some of us have been watching that for a while. I've been telling people for a while, hey, the guy with the lamb chop sideburns might win. And they go, what? And I go, I don't know. I don't even know how to say his name. But you know something about this. What's the good, the bad, and the ugly?
So I've been following him for like 6 years, give or take.
Okay.
My wife is Argentinian. My father-in-law knows him. If he was from some other country, like Chile or Brazil, I probably wouldn't have followed him. But since he was from Argentina and he was this bombastic guy, I always found him really interesting. Nobody would have thought he would ever become president of the country.
When did he switch from being a professor to something else?
So he started studying economics in 1989. Okay. After the hyperinflation in 1989, Argentina has a history of banking crisis and inflations.
When did that start? Where things were getting messed up there? How long has that been going on?
Well, it became rich after they adopted basically the U.S. Constitution in I would say 1860.
Okay.
And Argentina for about 40 years like just grew exponentially, and it was considered in 1895 by many sources to be the richest country in the world, which is astounding. Very beautiful place. They had. Really, really free market economics. Then they started to go progressive during World War I, similar to the United States, like Woodrow Wilson. During the Great Depression and World War II, they got off the gold standard, which had been very great for them. And they elected, they did the same thing as FDR. They started to do industrial policy, which was a failure in the 1930s. A general named Juan Perón, I think he was a general, he's either a corporal or general. I think he's general named Juan Perón took power in this coup of the government. So the another thing with Argentina is, They have many banking crises, and they also have this history of military coups. So I believe they've had like four or five military coups where the military takes control of the government. So Juan Perón took control of the government in 1946. They did a coup, and then eventually he became president, and he became the most popular president ever in Argentina. And this guy was the person that allowed all the Nazis to seek refuge in Argentina. And he was very similar ideologically to them. He was a national socialist, and he just completely destroyed their economy. He spent, he tried to unionize every possible industry. He spent tons of money that they didn't have. And he developed this cult of personality in Argentina that's remained there for 80 years, basically. He and his wife, Evita Perón, was beloved, and they used a lot of tactics where to increase their popularity. For example, Evita would, every single grand opening of any major store or anything, Evita would have to be there. Any famous athletes from abroad, when they came back to Argentina, Evita would have to get a picture with them. There was just so many things. Perón would beat up, harm his opponents. So he actually got couped himself in 1955 and then came back in 1973. He's like their Abraham Lincoln. You basically can't be a politician without being a Peronist until now, until Milei. And his policies, I mean, are just unbelievably bad. Argentina cannot import or export without government permission. Their taxes are extremely high. They've ran a fiscal deficit 113 out of the last 123 years. So since the turn of the 20th century, 113 of the years they've ran a fiscal deficit. So how do you handle a fiscal deficit? You either have to print money or get more debt. So they've used the money printer.
So they probably haven't defaulted on their debt like some countries. They've just
they default on their debt. Yeah, they default on their debt all the time.
So they do that, and they have inflation, huh?
So they have inflation, and then they default on the debt. In 2001, they had one of the worst defaults in history. Basically, people had their money in banks, and they didn't have enough money to pay their debts. And so they took the money out of the banks and then gave people basically fake money. And it caused this massive financial crisis. And that was because of a default, where they had all these debts that they couldn't pay.
And it's been getting worse and worse, huh?
It's been getting really bad, and I think they started their central bank in the 1930s. So for a long time, they had no central bank, and just like the U.S., they used it as a money printer to monetize the debt. They've just continued to rack up all of these regulations that have just harmed the economy. Regulate, like I said, you can't import or export basically anything without permission. This has caused untold amount of economic destruction in the country. In the last 20 years, the country has been run by a family called the Kirchners.
Okay.
There's Nestor Kirchner, and then his wife. He ran the country for 4 years. He's the president for 4 years. Then he died. And his wife became president for 8 years. And she, until Milei got elected, she was the vice president. So essentially 16 of the last 23 years, they have been in power. And they have been absolutely awful. First of all, they're extremely corrupt. They basically looted the entire country. They've stolen billions from the treasury. And Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner actually got a 6-year prison sentence for her corruption. Only 6 years, though, even though she stole billions from the treasury.
And then how have people been reacting to this? Are they just getting more and more poor? Do rich people leave? What's been going on?
Yeah. So there's been a mass emigration from Argentina. I mean, my wife is one of them. Many people in her family have actually left Argentina because the economy is so bad.
And where do they usually go?
A lot of them go to Spain, to the United States, but anywhere, anywhere where the economy is good, they'll go.
Yeah, because Spain hasn't had the same kind of inflation type of stuff, right? It's the euro is inflating so much. Yeah.
Well, the economy is better, but I just put it in perspective. In 2001, in the 90s and up to 2001, Argentina had a policy to keep their peso on par with the dollar. Mm-hmm. So one peso equaled $1. And that actually worked for a while until Argentina printed so much money that they couldn't keep that ratio anymore, because there was a lot more pesos than there were, you know. So there was a lot more pesos than dollars, and that's why they had default in 2001. But ever since then, ever since that 1-to-1 ratio, the gap between the dollar and the peso has just been rising exponentially. After the Kirchners, so Cristina Kirchner got her second term ended in 2015. Between that time, between 2001 and 2015, the peso went from one to one to $1 is 15 pesos. So that's a pretty big devaluation there. Then they elected Mauricio Macri, who was, you could argue, the only non-Peronist to be elected, but he really was a Peronist. He was elected to change things, but like the Republicans in the United States, he did nothing. So he was there for 4 years and didn't cut spending and didn't really fix anything at all. And in that time, it went from 16-to-1 to 40-to-1. And in the last 4 years, so he was in power from 2015 to 2019. And since 2019, the peso has gone from 40-to-1 to 1,000-to-1.
I'm looking at it right now, and it's saying it's 810-to-1.
Yeah, that's a little bit complicated, but the currency has devalued so much that it has caused so much economic harm in the country. This year, the inflation was at least 160. I think it might have been 200% inflation this year.
So it's really gone crazy. Yeah,
it's gone very crazy, and that's why they gave a guy like Milei a chance. You had the center right party, that Macri guy was, I guess you could call him like one of the Republicans. Mm-hmm. He was the center right. And he failed. He lost his reelection in 2019, and the Kirchners came into power again with Alberto Fernandez and Cristina Kirchner as vice president. And the economy just took a huge dive. And so when Milei started running, he actually got elected in 2021 to the Congress, basically. They call it the deputies. But it's basically what we would consider the Congress in the United States. And that was a huge surprise at the time. I remember when it happened, I was pretty shocked by it. He got elected, and he immediately started campaigning for president after getting elected. And one of the things that he did that was brilliant is that he would auction off his salary to people on his email list. So his salary of being in the government, he would auction it off to one lucky winner. I think he would do it twice a month. So everybody wanted to be a part of his email list, and he became really popular. And the thing with him is, he was, you asked about he was an economist. I'm sorry. He was an economist, and he worked, as like a financial analyst / economist at big companies. So okay. He worked as a professor and he worked as a chief economist at big companies. A very bright guy. And in 2016, they put him on the television, this guy named Alexandro Fantino, put him on a show. So he put Millay on a show, and then the rest is history. Millay became this bombastic guy with no diplomacy that used to say like basically vile things. But he would always talk about what nobody else would talk about. He would talk about the corruption. He would talk about the inflation. He would talk about the peso going to crap. And he would do it in like a spectacular way. And he became very well known for this. And at the time you kind of saw this burgeoning libertarian movement in Argentina that never existed prior to Milei. We had people like my father-in-law, who was pretty libertarian. However, he was a PhD academic. And besides the people that he influenced as a professor, there just wasn't a lot of people that were libertarian. So Millay started going on television and became this hit. The ratings would always be very high whenever he was on television. So he became this top commentator in Argentina. So everybody knew who he was, and he would be he'd be a critic of the Kirchners. He'd be a critic of Macri. He was a big critic of the lockdowns. Argentina had some of the worst lockdowns in the world, in a poor country. So all these things together, the failure of the Kirchners, like I said, all the inflation. They also, Argentina, believe it or not, has not grown in like 12 years. So the economy has not grown in 12 years. Even though their population has grown, the economy has not grown. So their GDP per capita has actually gone down, decreased. So the economy is just a wreck.
And then if the money's gone really off the cliff. So yes. I'm looking at his Wikipedia page here. So he's been part of a thing, a party called Freedom Advances.
Okay.
How many different parties do they have there?
More than the U.S. Mm-hmm. They have a socialist party. They have like the center right party, which is kind of like the Republicans. They have the Peronist party, and the Peronist it's called the Judicialist party. It's been around since Peron, since the 1940s, and that's been by far the most dominant party in Argentina's history. Like I said, you basically can't be a politician without being a Peronist in Argentina. It's this cult of personality. Even though Peronism has mutated over the years. So that's one of the parties. There's this province called Cordoba, and that's like the New Hampshire of Argentina. They're super rebellious, and they actually do not like the Kirchners and the Peronists very much. And it's the second most populated province. Unfortunately, Argentina is very Buenos Aires dominated. So the capital and the biggest city is Buenos Aires. And that province is at least a third of the entire population of Argentina. And unfortunately, it's kind of a hotbed of Peronism. So all the other little provinces like Cordoba and Santa Fe and Mendoza always get outvoted by the massive Buenos Aires province. So, for example, Cristina Kirchner, when she ran for re-election in 2011, got 54% of the vote, and the second most votes was 16%. Mm. I mean, so they've been really dominant. It really took the economy falling apart and then all the corruption to be exposed for somebody like Milei to have a chance. But so you have that. So that Cordoba in this most recent election ran somebody to represent Cordoba in kind of the interior of the country. You had the socialist, you had the Kirchner's Peronist party, and then you had the center right, and then you had Milei's party, which he started only 2 years ago. So this is like the Libertarian Party. And it's actually a coalition of parties, small parties. It's really hard to start your own party, but you can make a coalition. So it's a coalition of parties from libertarians in different provinces. They're either libertarian or like what you would call conservatarian. And Milei started this 2 years ago. And when he started, only two people got elected from his party. So it was him and the current vice president, Victoria Vizcarrel. They were the only two people elected to that party in 2021. So from going, you know, from this party that just started to getting only two people elected to becoming president it's a astronomical rise.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And it's like it's it, so there, you know, there's these different parties, and that's kind of the dynamic of this whole system here. And the people got so fed up with the Kirchners and the ruling party that they elected Milei, and he beat both the traditional parties, which is quite amazing. And they also have a jungle system. So basically, if you're familiar with the jungle primary, it's not like the U.S. They all vote. They everybody votes. It's like an open primary, and they all vote at the same time. And Milei was expected to get 20% of the vote. This happened in August. This is when it all blew up. Milei had been polling very well. Once he decided to run for president, he'd been polling very well. And some polls actually showed that he was the most popular of all of the candidates running, which was shocking. But nobody thought that his party as like a third party would get the most votes in the primary, this open primary situation. But he did. He got the most votes in August, which just blew up Argentina. And he got into a runoff with the ruling Kirchner party, and he won the runoff. He got the most votes ever. So he got the most votes ever, 14.5 million. It's 56% of the vote. And that propelled him to be president.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it's kind of wild. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens, isn't it? And if he does do the stuff like, you know, like he's talking about pegging their stuff to the dollar again, which would be better than
going. He's talking about getting off the peso. It's a little different. He's not doing the pegging the dollar thing. He wants to close the central bank of Argentina, which is, according to him, the worst central bank in the entire world. So basically how he says is you have bad central banks like the Federal Reserve. You have terrible central banks like the ones in Latin America. And then you have the Bank of Argentina, which is even worse than that. So Milei wants to close the central bank, and what he wants to do is have a competition of currency.
Okay.
Kind of like what we discussed with New Hampshire. And what will inevitably happen is that the dollar will win that competition of currency, because every single person saves in dollars in Argentina. Because of the fact that you would never save with the peso, right? There's no, you know, with the extreme level of inflation the last 20 years, you would never save at the peso. So every single person saves in dollars. And they have more, outside of the U.S., they have the most dollars that people own of any country. So okay. I believe they have $260 billion in Argentina, which is a lot. So inevitably, what would happen is the country would dollarize.
Yeah.
And that's what Milei is proposing, is to dollarize the economy, get rid of the peso, which has been this disastrous currency for 40 years and probably and beyond that, and get rid of the central bank and have a free currency situation, which would inevitably dollarize the economy. He's done a few other things, like he's deregulated 380,000 pages of regulations.
and he can just do this because it's just the executive branch and you're just cutting out rules.
Exactly. They when the Kirchners took power, the ruling party of the last 20 years, especially Cristina Kirchner is the most powerful political force. She's extremely powerful. They had the majority in the Congress. So what they did is they strengthened the executive powers. And they did this thing. They gave the president this thing called a DNU, Decree of Necessary and Urgency.
Mm.
So what happens is you do this basically executive order, and the president basically gets to do what they want. And it's a very, unfortunately, Argentina is very central government focused. The states have more power in the United States. They have provinces, and the central government has far more power, unfortunately. But in this case, because the Kirchners strengthened the executive order to this thing, that what they did is they do this executive order and it becomes law, and unless it's rejected by both houses, so the Congress and the Senate, it goes into law. Milei has used their executive overreach against them.
This is
why you hear all these people calling him a tyrant and stuff, a dictator. But he's doing what is established in law. He's doing, for example, the previous president, Alberto Fernandez, did, I think he, in 4 years, he used this DNU like over 100 times. And Cristina Kirchner, I saw a statistic where she used it 270 times. So these same people that were just fine with the Peronists doing this executive order are all of a sudden decrying Milei for doing the same thing. But he's used the government against them, and he's massively deregulated the economy now.
And this has only been in a, you know, what?
3 weeks.
Three weeks.
Yeah. So he also has cut the ministries from 21 down to 9. So they have 21 government ministries, including the Department of Culture and the Department of Women, Gender, and Diversity. He got rid of the majority of the government ministries, including those two.
Yeah.
Including the Department of Women and Gender and the And there's a bunch of them, like they, there's like the department, the Ministry of Sports. Why do you need a Ministry of Sports and Tourism?
Yeah.
So he got rid of that. And he's planning on, he's fired a bunch of employees. He's cut welfare for a lot of, there was a, apparently a lot of fraud in the welfare. They were giving welfare to people that were, that had yachts and yachts and planes and were taking luxurious vacations. These people were getting welfare.
You can just start clearing that kind of stuff out.
There's so much fraud in the government there, where somebody will, they're paying for people to work for the government that aren't actually working. So one of his first measures was to bring everybody that works for the government has to go into the office, because since COVID, nobody's been going into the office, or less people. And he wants everybody into the office. So if you aren't actually in the office, you're not going to get paid.
Yeah. So that way,
and it's a good way to cut people out, and cutting out
people that are duplicating things or on vacation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what happens is, I had a pregnancy or something, and you know, I'm going on maternal leave, and they just never come back, and they continue to get paid. And this is just a common thing in Argentina that everybody knows happens. And Milei is ending it. He's also ending all the infrastructure projects that aren't in the works, which is a way that the Kirchners actually did their corruption. It's a massive scam in Argentina, where they get these construction projects, and they basically, there's bribes and all that stuff, and then they overcharge for the construction projects. The companies overcharge for the construction projects, and sometimes they don't even finish the infrastructure. They don't even finish the project. Mm-hmm. They just pocket the money. So this is a way for the federal government to give out all of their benefits to their cronies and all that stuff.
Yeah, with the U.S. federal government, it's so massive. How would we even know what's going on with that kind of stuff?
You know, yeah, exactly.
It's just so beyond us. I who knows how much of this stuff is going on?
There's certainly a lot of it. It's probably not to the extent of Argentina. Argentina is levels above. Milei has done, he's doing audits to find fraud. So, I mean, he's just doing a lot. He also, Argentina, in addition to all of this, trying to reform the government, Argentina has like 41 publicly owned companies that are huge. Most of them, all of them lose money because the government runs them.
Okay.
Like Argentina Airlines is one. The government runs the airlines. And since Cristina Kirchner was the one that made it public, made the government took over the airlines for the government, and since then the government has had to subsidize it $8.5 billion. And there's just many examples like that, where because the government is running these businesses, they lose tons of money, and they're a huge black hole to the budget of the government, because they have to pay for them to lose money, basically. And
if he's able to do this other stuff, he should be able to deregulate that or auction those things, the rights.
Yes, it has to go right, but it has to go through the Congress. Mm-hmm. So the DNU, basically, it goes into law immediately unless the Congress rejects it. You understand? And even it has to be both congressional bodies have to reject it. Some of these things, like privatizing businesses, actually have to be passed by both
houses. So it'll be slower. Yeah.
Yes, but he's going in lightning speed. He's already delivered a package of laws to the Congress, which I believe has these privatizations. And with the airlines, it's funny. He intends to give it back to the, sell it back to the employees, which, you know, if you are a communist or a labor person, that should be like your goal, is you actually get to have ownership of the company. But no, of course, the unions are opposed to having the workers own the company. It's quite bizarre. So it's pretty funny what's going on. Yeah. And I mean, there's so many things. I think there was another 100, like I said, there was three, he's getting, removing 380,000 pages of regulations, which includes like everything, importing, exporting. Argentina doesn't allow you to import or export. The labor regulations are just ridiculous. You have to, I mean, to do anything in Argentina, you need a lawyer, an accountant. And the employers get sued constantly, and always in the because the it's just so easy for the employee to be like, oh, you broke a law, and unfortunately the employers always lose. So what's happened in Argentina is that the informal economy is bigger than the formal economy, whereas the people that are paid under the table are actually a higher number than the people that are paid legally.
And then are they paid straight in dollars, do you think, or how does that work? You're going under the table.
I think they probably pay them in pesos, but
yeah, okay.
They might pay them in dollars as well.
Hmm.
But that's because it's so costly tax wise and then regulation wise and lawsuit wise to actually have an employee. And it's just, and you know, people in Argentina make only a few hundred dollars a month. I think it's like $300 a month. So it's really sad. And this was a very prosperous country, like I told you. So, mm-hmm. And you go there, it's very, you can see it. You can tell this place was a very rich place. The architecture, the statues, the parks are all spectacular, but they're all built, almost all of them are built over 100 years ago. So it's in a sad shape. And there's Milei has quite a bit of support for his initiative so far. I saw a poll that 71% of the people supported the DNU, the executive order to deregulate the economy. Milei's popularity has been rising now. He's only been in office for 3 weeks, but he's actually quite popular right now. On the flip side, the people that don't like him are absolutely going crazy. So there is massive protests. The trade unions are all going to do a general strike in November or in January. So basically the country will come to a halt for a couple of days because the unions are so mad at Milei, even though, you know, the people that work for the trade unions have been impoverished too.
Mm-hmm.
They've been impoverished the last 20 years by the Kirchners and the Peronists. So you'd think that some of them would actually maybe be willing to give Milei a chance, but we'll see. So the left is really trying to coup Milei right now.
Yeah. Oh yeah. There's going to be, all the people that are going to get cut out, get their money supply cut out.
Oh yeah.
Cuts out corruption and stuff. And
well, yeah. Think of all the people that benefit from the plunder of the government.
Mm-hmm.
Those people all be upset, and you know, that's why people, the country is very agricultural, is wonderful farms, great, the best farming in the world, best cattle, the best steak in the world. They have more cattle than people, and the farmers are the ones that absolutely get totally screwed. They just get taxed to death.
Mm.
So that's why Cordoba, which is a farming province and Santa Fe and Mendoza went so hard for Millay because he wanted to actually relieve the burdens on them by the Peronists that had been implemented by the Peronists.
Yeah.
Well, so it's a fascinating situation.
I'm bumping up into my next thing here, so I guess we better wrap it up. We've been talking for a while. Yeah. Well, this was all interesting. It's interesting to hear what you think about any checks it and that sort of stuff and doing work with Club 75 and then getting all this Argentinian stuff is interesting.
Yeah, it's a fascinating country for sure.
All right, Scott, I'm going to close off our recording, but it's been fun talking to you.
Yep. Have a great day.